Engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Father Frank is one of the most prominent pro-life leaders in the world. Originally from New York, the great state of New York, he was ordained in... Yes, New Yorkers, go ahead, you can have your moment. All right. He was ordained in 1988 by Cardinal John O'Connor. As a matter of fact, he just had celebrated his 30-year anniversary 2 days ago. So congratulations, Father. Since 1993, Father has served full-time in pro-life leadership with his bishop's permission. He's the National Director of Priests for Life, the largest pro-life ministry in the Catholic Church. He's also the President of the National Pro-Life Religious Council and the National Pastoral Director of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign and of Rachel's Vineyard, which is a phenomenal organization, the world's largest ministry for healing after abortion, such an important part of this process that we seldom focus on. He travels throughout the country to an average of 4 states every week. We were just over there at our table having dinner, and he was recounting just this last week's travel. He's been to, I think, 2 or 3 states, up there. So he definitely is a world traveler. And he preaches and teaches against abortion, producing programs regularly for religious and secular radio and television networks. He was asked by Mother Teresa to speak in India on life issues and has addressed the Pro-Life Caucus of the United States House of Representatives. The Vatican appointed him to the Pontifical Academy for Life and to the Pontifical Council for the Family, which coordinates the pro-life activities of the Catholic Church. Father Frank was invited by members of Congress to preach at the prayer service they had in the Capitol just prior to the vote on healthcare reform. He received the Proudly Pro-Life Award by the National Right to Life Committee and numerous other pro-life awards and honorary doctorates. He's the author of 4 books, Ending Abortion, Not Just Fighting It, Pro-Life Reflections for Every Day, Abolishing Abortion, and Proclaiming the Message of Life. Norma McCorvey, who is the Jane Roe of the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade abortion decision, called Father Frank the catalyst that brought me into the Catholic Church. Please join me in welcoming our speaker, Father Frank Pallone.
Thank you, Deacon. Thank you so much.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we have obviously a fabulous audience in this room tonight, but in my hand I have an audience of thousands and thousands more throughout the country and around the world on Facebook Live, and we want to say something to all these people out there from coast to coast in this great nation and in this great pro-life movement. As I travel around this country and interact with pro-lifers, as I'm sure you can appreciate, when we talk about California, some of them say, are there any pro-lifers out there? And tonight, look at them. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. All right, so I'm gonna set this up over here. Here, all right. Perfect. All right. Well, brothers and sisters, this is no strange place for me. We have, with LAPS, we at Priests for Life have been interacting with, supporting, advising, helping as we've been able for not years, but decades. Astrid has been a friend for a very, very long time. We have done work together in various facets of the pro-life movement, helping over the years our great Hispanics for Life movement. Great to see all of you here. the work we've done together at EWTN and many other venues. So this is like coming home for me. And not only in my relationship with Astrid and her team and LAPS, but also with the Archdiocese here of Los Angeles from my very, very earliest days leading Priests for Life. I started 25 years ago on this particular, in this particular position. The Archdiocese of Los Angeles has always been a strong supporter of our efforts, and I've come out here countless times, whether to speak to the priests or to the parish representatives, pro-life representatives of the parishes. We've had numerous training days and days of recollection and pro-life prayer vigils and preaching in parishes. So I really do feel very much at home here. I want to thank all of you, some of you I've known for many years, who have been involved in this great movement and who are committed to be involved in it as long as it takes. Because we're not just here to witness against abortion. We're not just here to speak against abortion. We're not just here to reduce the numbers of abortions. We are here and we are in this movement for one ultimate purpose, and that is to end abortion. We are united with you in that goal. We are united with you in the confidence that we will reach that goal. And in that confidence, I also want to bring you the greetings and prayerful good wishes of our whole team at Priests for Life. Many of you know Janet Morana, co-founded Silent No More, the great movement where those who have been hurt by abortion speak out and share their testimonies. Alveda King, niece of Martin Luther King Jr., full-time member of our team. She says the civil rights movement of today is the pro-life movement. We've got Brian Kemper with our youth outreach, and Marie Smith, the wife of Congressman Chris Smith, heads up our international outreach. We've got Teresa and Kevin Burke, the co-founders of Rachel's Vineyard. We've got full-time priests working together with me. This whole beautiful team, all united, working diligently around the country and across the globe. They send you their best greetings and warm wishes. They know I'm here tonight. And we are all with you, brothers and sisters, not just tonight, but joining hands and hearts and resources with you throughout the year to grow this outreach, this LAPS outreach, surrounded, as Astrid reminded you, by so many killing centers, and really you're right in the heart of this battle, and in the educational work that is done. I can tell you, I know this work of LAPS intimately, and I can tell you, brothers and sisters, if you've been supporting it, or if you are considering supporting it or increasing your support, I can tell you this. I speak at pregnancy centers all over the place. In fact, we speak at the national conferences of the pregnancy centers to train the directors and the volunteers how to do things right. LAPS does it right. You're doing it right. Share with you, my friends, that what the heart of the pregnancy center movement is, because it is a movement. There are thousands of pregnancy centers across the country. By the way, they outnumber the abortion facilities now 5-1. Wow. 25 years ago, when I was starting off with Priests for Life, there were a couple of thousand abortion facilities in our country. 2/3 of them have closed. Amazing. It's a business. Abortion is a business. That's not just a philosophy, an evil, a moral evil. It is all those things. But remember, it's a business, and the other side sees it as a business. And if your business has lost 2/3 of its business, you're in trouble. The abortion industry is in trouble. The days of abortion in this country are numbered, and it is largely because of the growth of the pregnancy center movement. And in the heart of that movement, I want to just trace it for you a little bit, because the heart of what goes on at LAPS and the other pregnancy centers is in fact the heart of the entire pro-life movement. And one of the moms whose beautiful testimonies we watched together said it perfectly. They gave me hope. It is with hope that a person is able to say yes to life. What drives a person to reject life, to schedule an appointment to kill that life, is not freedom of choice. It's despair. The term freedom of choice is contrary to fact. Women don't get abortions because of freedom of choice. They get them because they feel they have no freedom and no choice. They are in despair. The mission of the pro-life movement, the heart of the pregnancy center movement, is to replace despair with hope. And when we can do that, we give the people the strength to say yes to life. The heart of the movement also is love. Now, love is one of the most misused, abused, and confused words in the English language. But very simply, we can say this. Love means I sacrifice myself for the good of the other person. Abortion is just the opposite. Abortion says I sacrifice the other person for the good of myself. This is a movement of love. And it's not just that the pregnancy centers are a movement of love. What I'm saying to you is that the heart of the pregnancy center is the heart of the entire pro-life movement. So the legislative activity, the hard work that so many of us just engaged in with this midterm election, electing pro-life candidates, that's a work of love. Educating, this is a work of love. Protesting and praying out in front of the abortion facility, this is a work of love too. It's not just one aspect of the pro-life movement that's motivated by love. The whole movement is a movement of love. I was privileged to know and talk with frequently Mother Teresa. And when we started Priests for Life, she was very, very excited about this movement. And we talked a lot about strategy of ending abortion. And I went to see her for a number of days in Calcutta. It was just a few months after she spoke in Washington, D.C. at the National Prayer Breakfast in 1994. You remember that speech? It was the Clintons and the Gores were sitting there. They were the only four people in the room that didn't stand up and applaud when she said that abortion is a murder by the mother herself, and that if we say that a mother can kill her own child, how can we tell other people not to kill each other? And everybody stood up and applauded, except the four of them who nervously took their water glasses and took a little drink and hoped that the moment would pass quickly, you know? And I said to Mother Teresa, you know, Mother Teresa, many people in America loved that speech. You know what she said to me? What about the rest of them? And she said, excuse me one moment. She went in the back. She came out with a typewritten copy of the speech. I don't know if it was the very one she had there at the podium, but she gave it to me. And she said, spread this to the rest of them. I want them all to know my words. And so we've been proclaiming those words ever since. But you know what she also said in that speech? Here's how we end abortion. Teaching the mother how to love. And that love means you sacrifice your own plans, your own time, your own preferences for the sake of the other. Again, love, I sacrifice myself for the good of the other. Abortion, I sacrifice the other for the good of myself. And it doesn't even end up being the good of yourself. It ends up being the destruction of yourself. But there's another thing about the heart of the pro-life movement and the heart of the pregnancy center movement that I want to dwell on just a little bit longer, and that it is a warrior's heart. And brothers and sisters, this is very important to understand. This is not simply a nice, sweet kind of work. This is a war. It is not just that these moms and dads, these families and these babies are in need, and you, by your generous support and LAPS, by its very intelligent, systematic, professional, persevering commitment to do this work, is meeting that need. It is all that, but we need to understand that it is not just that these people are in need and we're meeting the need. There will always be moms in need. I mean, if there were no abortion, and when the day comes, not if, but when the day comes, that abortion is a sad chapter of our past and these babies are again protected by law, there will always be pregnant moms who are afraid. And the need for counselors, there'll always be the need for counselors, there'll always be the need for someone to take their hand and say, you know what, You can get through this pregnancy. We can help you and your baby and your family. So, my friends, it's not just that they're in need. It's that they're under attack. Let's understand the situation we are in. There is a war against the unborn. It is a vicious war that is orchestrated, planned, and funded by very smart, powerful, and well-organized people and groups and politicians and political parties. This is a war. It's worldwide. The other side, and by the other side I mean the abortion industry, is bloodthirsty, literally. They are on the march. They do millions of dollars of research how to intercept moms like we saw tonight before we do. They spend millions and tens of millions of dollars finding out how, figuring out how they can market abortion. And when I say LAPS does it right, let me give you one example of what I mean. Abortion is the only thing, when you think about it, that you market by not talking about what it is, instead of by talking about what it is. Because the other side knows full well that if they talked about what abortion actually is, if they described the procedure, if, God forbid, they showed people what they're selling by actually showing them a picture of what abortion does to a baby, they'd never be able to sell it. They know that full well. It's absolutely disgusting and horrifying. Not even pro-life people want to see pictures of what abortion looks like. But LAPS is not afraid. As part of the effort of education, as part of the effort of counseling, to reveal the horror of what abortion is. And brothers and sisters, this is part of what we need to do. There are ways of doing it. There are methodologies of doing it. We know what we're doing. The one thing we're doing for sure is not hiding it. That's the job of Planned Parenthood. That's the job of the abortion industry. That's the job of these politicians who come asking for your vote and meanwhile don't lift a finger to help these babies. As a matter of fact, they vote for all kinds of policies to continue killing them. But if you listen to a pro-abortion politician give a speech about abortion, if you read a book or an article by a pro-abortion academician, a professor, you will never see in those speeches or in those articles the words that you will see in the medical textbooks that describe how you do an abortion. And obviously you'll never see the words arms and legs and limbs and skulls and crush the skulls and dismemberment, decapitation, and forceps and blood and intestines. But these, you open up the textbooks on how to do abortion, you see all those words right there. They describe abortion as these dismemberment and decapitation. But the other side doesn't want to go anywhere near that. Because they know if people realize that that's what they're selling, they'd never buy it. This is a war. And these women are being targeted by the abortion industry. They are being sought after. One of the things we do at Preschool Life is minister to people who used to work in the abortion facilities, no longer do, have repented and now seek healing. And they talk to us about how they're trained to get that mother into that abortion facility as quickly as they possibly can, and to hide from her not only the nature of the abortion procedure, the reality of the baby and her development, but also the consequences that follow abortion. And as if we needed a lesson here in California about how much of a war this is, not only does the abortion industry want to destroy these babies, they want to destroy this work of LAPS and of all the pregnancy centers that outnumber them 5-1. They want to destroy it. They're not about choice. They're not about freedom. They're about dominating America. I do not exaggerate. Why do you think there was the case of NIFLA in the Supreme Court, arising, of course, as you know, out of California, and the attempt of the legislature, the audacity of the legislature to say to pregnancy centers, you're going to advertise for abortion? I mean, what kind of audacity does that require? that the very people who are giving their lives to save lives have to advertise for the taking of life. Where do you find these people? Well, I'll tell you, brothers and sisters, it's not just audacity, it's desperation. Because they can count. They can't reason very well, but they can count. And they see the abortion clinics closing, and they see the numbers going down, and they see the dollars going down. And they say, well, we've got to stay in business. So hey, let's try to ride on the backs of the pro-life people. That's the same reason that they passed this arrogant law that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and we were battling right side by side with NIFLA. Tom Glessner is a good friend, longtime colleague of mine. He heads up NIFLA, and we were there with him at the Supreme Court. We did a friend of the court brief. We were talking about it all over the country. It's desperation by the abortion movement. And it's the same reason why they tried to force Priests for Life, together with the Little Sisters of the Poor and practically every employer in America, to include in the health insurance plans we offer our employees the provision of abortion. And when we first heard about that back in 2011, 2012, we said, no way. President Obama can issue all the mandates he wants. We took the line of scripture, we will obey God rather than men. So we, together with many other groups, took that case all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court looked at everything and they said, you know what, there is a way to work this out. There is a way for the government to achieve its objectives without taking away the religious freedom of these plaintiffs. And basically the court kicked it back to the government and to the plaintiffs and they said, work it out. Be adults and work it out. There's a way to do it. The Obama administration, in subsequent conversations we had with them and with our attorneys, didn't want to work it out. And then God sent a man named Donald Trump, and we worked it out. And I want to say a word about the political winds blowing in the country right now. Brothers and sisters, we are in an opportunity of a lifetime. I know the president. He asked me during the course of the campaign to be part of a pro-life advisory coalition, as well as a Catholic advisory group, two distinct groups through which they sought advice during the campaign. One of the pieces of advice we gave them was, talk about late-term abortion, talk about it clear, talk about it plain, and you heard the third debate that he had with Clinton. Ripping babies out of the womb in the ninth month of pregnancy, that might be all right with you, but it's not all right with me. That was a turning point in that election. And I was told back then, if this man is elected, he will do everything that past pro-life presidents have done, and more. And you know what? Those words echo in my mind every day because I'm seeing them come to pass. He's doing far more things. His administration is doing far more things than make it into the headlines. But if you dig into this, you connect with groups like ours, you connect with the White House website itself directly, hear it from the horse's mouth, you will see practically on a daily basis work that is being done, a lot of it behind the scenes, to secure and to advance and to protect this cause of defending life, and more than any other past administration has done. He didn't only reinstate the Mexico City policy, he expanded it so that instead of holding back about $500 million from the international abortion industry, he held back $8.8 billion from them. It's unbelievable. You know, people came out in 2016 and they elected him and a lot of other pro-life candidates, and we said, as this midterm was approaching, listen, we've got to get the rest of them out there, got to get them back out there and vote again. This is like part two of the vote, because he's not going to be able to accomplish the things people were motivated to elect him to accomplish back 2 years ago if he doesn't have a Congress that's able to send him the kind of bills that he is ready to sign, like the complete defunding of Planned Parenthood. He has defunded Planned Parenthood partially, but the complete defunding, it requires a pro-life House and a stronger pro-life Senate than we have had in the last 2 years. But you know, there's something else going on. We know what happened with the House. But brothers and sisters, You don't need the House of Representatives to confirm good judgments to our federal courts. And we, as a result of this midterm elections, have made it even easier now for the president to get his nominees confirmed, because he has more of a cushion in case there's one or two Republicans who say, oh, I don't like this particular nominee or that particular judge. They can still get them through. And even in the lame duck session now of Congress and the rest of this year, there are about 70 federal judges who've already been nominated and have gone through most of the process, and they just require a vote from the Senate floor. I think we're going to see that done by the end of the year. And then in the next 2 years, he's going to continue to transform the federal judiciary. I'm telling you, this is going to be the longest lasting legacy, the biggest victory of this election that we just had. These judges are going to be sitting in our federal courts, not for years, but for decades. And they are pro-life. And my friends, I'm saying this to you fully aware that we are here to support the work of pregnancy services. We are here to support labs, because the two are connected. The other side is at war with us. They want to close down LAPS. They don't just want that those mothers who come here have the option of abortion if they want it. That's not what this is about. They want to shut this work down. And when they want to shut down the work of the pro-life movement, they don't go to the legislature. Not even in California, most of the time. They go to the courts. They go to find their liberal judges and friends in the federal court. That's how they get their work, their dirty work done. And even the Ninth Circuit is under the President and the U.S. Senate to confirm and to nominate and confirm judges. He is transforming the entire judiciary coast to coast. We're going to see that happen in the next 2 years. We're going to see it happen for a long time to come. So, brothers and sisters, finally, the heart of this movement, replacing despair with hope, advancing and teaching the true meaning of love, having a warrior's heart to realize there is no place to fight for life where you can do so in a calm and passive way and think that everything's going to be nice. It's always a war. This is the movement pro-life, with a very specific meaning. And this point that I want to conclude with here is so crucial for us to be able to win and to do everything God has called us to do. You know, the devil does not tempt good people to do evil things. He's not going to put in your mind when you leave here tonight to steal some car that's parked along the street. It'd be a waste of the devil's time and energy to put that idea into your head, because you're going to laugh it off. He's not going to put in your mind the idea that he's not going to try to tempt you to rob a bank tomorrow, you know? No, you know what? You know what he does with good people? The devil tempts good people to do good things. So many different good things that they miss the necessary things, and they miss the most important things. What I want to tell you tonight, there is nothing more important than getting it right on abortion. Now, nobody here is going to say that abortion is the only issue we face as a church, as a nation. Of course, we all know that. But brothers and sisters, there is nothing more foundational than this problem. There is nothing more foundational than the right to life, which abortion directly attacks. There are many, 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 many issues. And what has happened in our movement is that the term pro-life has become too big for its own good. You know what I'm talking about. Follow this train of thought. Why is unemployment an important issue under our president and this Congress that's concluding now? The unemployment rates are lower than they've ever been, right? We've made some significant progress in various different demographics. They are lower than they've ever been. And unemployment is an issue because people have a right to work. They have a right to work because they have a right to make a living. They have a right to make a living because they have a right to live. Why is solving the problem of poverty so important? Well, because people have a right to food and clothing and shelter. Why do they have a right to those things? Because they have a right to live. Terrorism, fighting terrorism is so important. Why? Well, because we have a right to be protected in our life, because we have a right to live. Brothers and sisters, some people say to me, well, immigration is just as important issue as abortion. I said, in what universe are you living in? Show me the clinics throughout the country that at the rate of 3,000 a day are dismembering and decapitating legally 3,000 immigrants, and then we can start talking about the equivalence of the problems. Not to say any of these problems isn't crucially important, it has to be dealt with, of course it does. But brothers and sisters, we will never learn how to welcome people across the border of our country if we can't welcome them across the border of the womb. We will never learn how to feed people who are hungry if we can't feed our own flesh and blood. We will never learn how to protect the guilty from the death penalty if we don't even know how to protect the innocent. And we will never have peace between nations if we can't maintain peace between a mother and her own child. We can't. And this great movement, which is called pro-life, is not called pro-life because we're concerned about every issue under the sun. If you're concerned about the sanctity of life from conception to natural death, and of course we are, and that's what we teach as a church, we have to understand that's an ethic. It's an ethic. It's a teaching. It's not a movement. A movement doesn't just have a vision. A vision means your preferred future. A vision is all life is protected from conception and natural death. That's a vision. That's not a mission. A mission is, what are you going to do to get there? With your limited time and resources, what is your movement, your organization, what are you doing and how are you doing it to get to, closer to, that preferred vision of the future? And here's what our movement does. It addresses a specific problem. It's pro-life, not in the sense of, oh, every issue is pro-life. It's pro-life in the sense that there is a right to life. It's the most basic of all the rights. And there's a group of people that have been explicitly, specifically targeted to take that right away. And that group of people are the children in the womb. The mission of this movement is to restore to the children in the womb the protection of their life to end the violence of abortion. That is the issue. That is the movement. That is the purpose of what we do at LAPS and in all the other facets of pro-life work. And don't ever apologize for it. As a specific focus, if I were going to start an airline, and people said to me, oh, well, you have to be concerned about all forms of transportation. I said, what the heck are you talking about? If I'm going to start an airline, my business is airplanes. I'm not doing trains and boats and oh, well, you have to be concerned about all transportation. It's nice like when people try to say to us, oh, you're pro-life or you're fighting abortion, well, you have to be concerned about all these other issues. Well, I have news for you. I am concerned about all the other issues, but I have a mission, and it's to end abortion. Never apologize for that focus. And never doubt, that we will do it. We will win, we will achieve that goal, and your generosity, and your participation here tonight, and your sacrifice, and your prayer, and your love, just your presence here, gives all of us more and more confidence that the day will come that we will be having banquets like this, celebrating the fact that once again, our brothers and sisters in the womb are protected just like you and I are. Let's hasten that day. God bless you, and thank you for having me.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.